Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Health Talk. I'm Zi Xing.
And I'm Sheng Lau. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about telehealth and telemedicine. And joining us are two special guests, Juliana and Dr. Bobby from Rescue. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves for our listeners?
Hello, everyone. I'm Juliana, and thank you so much, guys, for having us on your podcast. I'm one of the founders of Rescue SG House Call and Telemedicine Service, and this is Dr. Bobby Stryker.
Hello.
Who is my business partner and also my husband as well. So Rescue is literally our baby. I take care of the business side of things, and he...
I do all the clinical, the doctoring stuff, the boring stuff.
Thanks so much for sharing. So I just like to ask a little bit more about what exactly is a house call and telemedicine service? Because for me, what I understand from a house call service from the books or movies I've read is basically this very private and exclusive service that allows you to call your own personal doctor to come to your house. And to me, it seems like it might be kind of expensive. So what is this service that you do provide?
That's something that we realized very quickly. The local mindset about what a house call is very, very different to what it is in places like the UK and France, and even closer to Singapore, even in Australia. A lot of our patients before the pandemic were tourists, people who have a lot of experience with house calls. They'd often call us with minor conditions. They know the drill. They're in foreign territory in Singapore. They've had too much chili crab. They need to see a doctor and they don't know what to do. So they call us and we would go over to the hotel. It's for minor acute illnesses. So just think of it as something more for convenience. Say the kind of stuff you would typically visit a clinic for, but instead of going down, when you're feeling terrible and you should be resting really, and it's almost counterproductive having to drag yourself out of bed and searching for a clinic, we instead come to you. And like I said, in the West, it's often free, it's often heavily subsidized, and we wanted to make it accessible. Now, if you're used to watching Korean dramas, they often show the more extreme end of it where people come over and put up drips and stuff. That's not normal for a typical and more old school traditional house call service. A more traditional approach would be just your local family clinic doctor coming up to your house with a doctor's bag, some medicines, essentially the same kind of minor acute illnesses you would visit a clinic for, we would come to you. And you're right, in Singapore, it was very expensive. We're talking like $200-$300 for a house call, which made it almost completely inaccessible except for the real upper echelon of society. And we wanted to kind of swing the balance the other way to open it and make it accessible to everyone. And if we're comfortable talking numbers, that's why our home visits during the day are $68.
To keep the menu very small, like what Gordon Ramsay always emphasizes in his program Kitchen Nightmares, he said keep the menu small so that we can offer a lot more at an affordable price.
So rather than trying to do everything, there are house call services that claim to be able to treat all emergencies in your home. But I'm pretty sure that's not the case. I can't imagine them doing a heart transplant or an appendectomy in your living room and all of this kind of stuff. So we keep it very focused. So we don't do emergency treatments.
Non-invasive.
Keeping it focused allows us to keep the price point down and make it accessible. So if you've got a child and it's out of hours, the clinics are closed, or granny's unwell, and sometimes grannies just don't want to go down to see a doctor at all. So what can you do? Previously, they might have been out of luck. What we're hoping with through Rescue, they have a few options.
Because you mentioned earlier that pre-pandemic, most of these patients or most of the clients were tourists, right? But let's say now that we are sort of settling down in the pandemic and living the new normal, has this sort of demographic shifted? Have you all seen changes in the type of patients that are visiting you now, aside from tourists?
Yeah, it's definitely changed a lot. So that was basically the main impetus for us to even start telemedicine. There's a lot of people who are afraid, who don't want to see a doctor at all, but still need some kind of medical attention so that they can still get the care that they need and get it safely. Of course, there are limits to what can be done safely through a teleconsult. I think if I'm not wrong, if we look at the numbers.
So we started this service in June last year, and I've been tracking the numbers. So initially the take up was pretty slow. So we have about 20 video consultation requests a month, and then slowly it just climbed to about 2 times of that. Right now we're sitting at a good 60 to 70 a month. Still considered not a lot. I don't think this service has reached its full potential yet, because right now MOH is extremely strict with patients with URTI symptoms.
URTI is what we call a cough or a cold, basically. Yeah. Upper respiratory tract infection symptoms. So what most people call flu type symptoms, we call it a URTI. That's doctor jargon.
Yeah, so you have to be swabbed. We don't do swabbing actually at Rescue. So because of this, we lose quite a lot of patients, and most of them just prefer in the end to go to the regular GP clinics for these tests. Hopefully next time when the COVID-19 cases are in control, when MOH relaxes the rules, maybe I think this market will grow even bigger.
Having said that, the ratio of a house call to video consultations is still more than 2-to-1 in the favor of house calls. People still seem to prefer a face-to-face consultation. The number of house calls we do significantly outweighs the number of video consults that we do.
I think going online is certainly something that a lot of businesses also had to adapt to given COVID. I was wondering though, pre-COVID, what were some other legal difficulties or difficulties that you had with setting up a house call system in Singapore?
It wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy road at all.
Yeah, we basically had about, I think, 3 years of going back and forth with MOH. When I first came to Singapore in 2010, I was in the polyclinics. I was a senior family physician. While I was still in the polyclinics and when we were planning to see what else we could do, that's when I already started exploring with MOH. A lot of them were really kind of unfamiliar with this concept because so far, home visits were being performed, but by doctors who have a physical clinic. So for us to want to open a dedicated, pure home visit service, they were really kind of confused. I'm not sure why, but it took some time. We kept getting no's to a lot of our questions until we crossed paths with the right person, a chap by the name of Praveen Rajkumar, who was ultimately the guy who helmed and led the MOH Leap Sandbox initiative. So he was something of a visionary. I think his role was specifically an engagement strategist or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he was our superhero man. Yeah, so he was really thinking out of the box and he immediately got what we wanted to do. That's when we really went ahead with Rescue. And eventually they then enrolled us into their sandbox as one of their first mobile medicine house call services.
And that really kickstarted everything. So the moment you have the MOH Leap Sandbox logo on the website, it helped us a lot, got a lot of recognition from the public also.
But it wasn't easy. There was a lot of emails, a lot of going back and forth. Then we had to meet in person to discuss further when people still could meet in person, touching on subjects like, you know, what procedures, what services would you offer? What about your medicines? What's your price point going to be like? How are you going to protect patient data? What clinic management system are you going to use? Data protection, confidentiality, and are you going to have safety netting measures in place? But thankfully, through my training and my experiences in polyclinic, I'd gone through all kinds of things. I ticked a lot of the right boxes. I'd gone through leadership training, risk stratification training, care project implementation pathways, patient safety advocate, renal advocate for the polyclinic. I don't want to blow my horn too much, but basically I ticked all the right boxes that they had enough confidence to allow us to go with it. As part of the sandbox, they also get kind of briefs on how they really tried their best to help us out, to help us. So if there was stuff happening in the media, sometimes telemedicine companies would get under fire, seen as MC services only, things like that. They would often help and say, look, has anyone approached you? Has the media approached you? Do you need any assistance with stuff? And it was all helmed by this chap. So they were actually really good. So they really helped us out. I don't think in a lot of countries you would get this kind of experience where you have private entities like ours being supported by the Ministry of Health. My family hearing this in the UK, they were like shocked, saying they would never have been able to get some kind of NHS endorsement the way we had been receiving. So we were really, really grateful.
Speaking of media and also of the awareness, do you think that telehealth and telemedicine, you know, especially given the ongoing pandemic, the lack of access to physical consultation, is it something that is changing? Is the consumer landscape is changing in the sense that, you know, more people are being aware of this and they are willing to consider this as alternatives?
Yeah, most of our calls actually come from the younger generation and folks who are more tech savvy. And because of this, it's also heavily influenced how we presented ourselves and positioned ourselves online and offline. So actually, this is why if you do look at our website, our various social media channels also, the colors and the images we use are more vibrant. So we avoided the usual colors like dark blue, green.
Yeah, we didn't want to go for the usual green, white and blue clinical website. They almost all merge into one. You can't differentiate one from the other. So we tried to see what we could do to stand out and make our own identity a little bit.
Yeah, so the text we use, the way we describe our services is less formal, but still informative enough for our patients to want to call us. Initially, when we showed our website to our well-meaning friends and family, actually said that the website looks too fashionable and looks too unconventional. You may turn away the older folks and they may think that you're not serious medical professionals. So after we started running Rescue, the opposite is true actually, because like we learn in business school, my marketing teacher always say your potential customers may not be the actual recipient of the product and services. For example, when you sell kids products, who are the ones buying the products? Actually, the parents. So the product messaging should be geared towards the parents. So in Rescue's case, it's also true to a large extent because most of the time, even though it's the older folks falling sick, the younger family members or more tech-savvy family members were the ones going online looking for a doctor for them. With all these in mind, the way we created the website is to appeal to this demographic. That said, I don't want to make it sound like the older folks do not appreciate modern creative websites and businesses. Also, they do too. We actually had someone a few months ago that told us that just by seeing a website, they feel a lot better. So that's good news for us.
That's a funny side story. We were actually at a public primary care forum at Khoo Teck Puat Hospital, and we kind of bumped heads with a competitor, and their team were telling us how they often like to have a look at our social media pages, check out our website, and they really like the angle we've taken. And they told us that just by looking at our website, that they feel better immediately, which is nice, but we hope that we're not stopping patients from calling us, treating them just by looking at the website.
When you mentioned the website, I think that was something I was discussing with the team just now also, that when I looked at the website, it was immediately like, whoa, this is really marketed towards young people. And I do agree with the fact that given how everything is now internet-based, when I try to find a service or product, if it doesn't have a website, I'll be like, I can't confirm whether company's actually there. I'll be quite wary. I fully agree with the part where you mentioned about how it is the younger people that would be helping perhaps our grandparents or parents to get these services. Because given that your service is a house call and telemedicine, people who would be exposed to this would be the people who are more connected to the internet. And while I'm not saying that my parents or my grandparents don't have access to the internet, but this would be the demographic that you market to. And I really empathize with the example they gave about how when old people went to traditional services and they had to wait for about 1 hour just for the waiting, and then 3 minutes consult, take the medicine, and then you go home. That was something that I really experienced when I had to bring my grandpa to the hospital also. And I think it's really quite cost effective given that I would have to grab to the hospital and grab back, and the medicine cost and the consult cost. In the end, the service that you're providing is really quite cost effective.
Yeah, that's true. Before we started, actually, this whole thing was inspired by Bobby's workplace. He used to work in a polyclinic, and I used to go to the polyclinic to pick him up every day. But usually, I'm there early. So just by sitting outside at the waiting room, just seeing how our old folks struggle to just walk from the sitting area to his room, it is quite traumatizing for them, and also quite difficult for them also to just get to your office. Can you imagine just that short journey? It took them that long, and there's so many family members there helping them. Imagine them doing that from their homes. That's why we've been talking about it for so long, that a house call doctor service or a telemedicine service would be so useful for these folks.
Given how convenient it is, I don't really know many of my friends that actually use telemedicine services, or my parents' friends that use it. And you mentioned earlier that there was this idea that Singaporeans didn't really understand this concept of house call. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Why can we not grasp that house calls is something that is possible?
There's a few things involved here. I think part of it is the health-seeking behavior, the health culture, the health literacy. When I first arrived in Singapore, you know, it was something of a rude awakening. Even though I was a consultant GP in the UK, the moment I came here, I realized, even though I'm supposed to be practicing the same medicine, it wasn't. It was very, very different. For example, in the polyclinic, you have an actual entity called the flu cluster. So if you come in with symptoms identified as runny nose, cough, sore throat, any of these symptoms, they'll specifically put you in something called the flu cluster, where you can be seen, you'll be streamlined, you have your temperature taken before you see the doctor, and you'll be seen very, very fast because the history is almost there. Okay, what's the problem? Runny nose, sore throat, cough. Okay, let's have a look at your nose, throat, cough, listen to your breathing. Everything looks good. Okay, here's the treatment you need. How many days MC and you're done. And it can almost be as fast as that. On a bad day in the polyclinic, my highest, I saw 117 patients in one day. The health behavior is very different. And I remember one of the first patients I saw, possibly the first patient I saw in Singapore, was a patient having a URTI, a cough and runny nose. I explained to them, it looks like you've got a virus, you're going to get better, you don't really need any specific treatment. And they started asking for cough syrup. Now, this is almost unheard of in the UK. No one sees their doctor to request cough syrup. They will usually only see the doctor when they've been unwell for quite some time, possibly because they think they need antibiotics. But here, the patient was demanding cough syrup. And eventually, when my colleague next door heard what was going on, he said, look, Bobby, this is how it is here. Patients just want the treatments for the symptoms that they have, even if it doesn't do anything. So for people who are a bit more well-informed, you'll know that virus is going to take care of itself. A cough syrup isn't going to make your cough go away faster. It's just a lubricant for your throat. But here, you'll see patients of all ages, could be talking someone who's a teenager in their 20s, 30s, or going all the way up to the grannies. They might have important medicines like diabetes, blood pressure, and cholesterol medicines that they will refuse to take because they don't feel anything. They feel well. So they think, why do I need to take these medicines? But if you give them cough syrup, they'll finish every single drop because they need to finish that cough syrup. Otherwise, that cough isn't going to get better. So there's a big difference in health-seeking behavior here. And I think that's part of it. Why do people think house calls are for certain conditions and not for others? I think that's more related to Singapore's own history because it's not had an accessible house call service up until now. So based on the house call services that have been here before, this is the kind of precedence that's been set, that these are for people who are willing to pay a lot of money and for very serious conditions. Even now, we get calls from patients literally sounding like they're at death's door sometimes, as if a home visit from a doctor might stop them from going to access an emergency, when of course that's clearly not possible. Often people call us thinking that we might be able to stop them from being hospitalized. They'll call us, say, look, doc, I think I'm having a heart attack, I'm having chest pain, or my loved one's been asleep for 2 days, they're still breathing. And I'll be like, actually, that means they're unconscious. They might have had a massive heart attack or a stroke. So they're breathing, they're still alive. But if they can't respond, that means they're unconscious. They need to be in hospital, but they don't want to go to hospital. So they call the house call doctor. And we often have this challenge of then having to explain how it's not safe. There's nothing we can do. It would be just a waste of time and money. And time is very, very important. If you're having a stroke or a heart attack, you might have heard of the golden hour. If you get into hospital within a certain time frame, you can be saved. You might be able to receive the life-saving treatment that you need instead of just waiting it out and seeing if you're going to get better when you likely won't. So I think the house call services that have come before us have kind of created a certain image for us. But in other parts of the world, because it's been so normalized, they know through firsthand experience that it can only treat certain minor conditions. If it's too serious, that's the time to call 999 or 995 here. I think that's one of the reasons. Primary care here, being a doctor in Singapore, a GP, a family physician in Singapore and in the UK, is very, very different. So you have this angle. There's the health seeking behavior, the culture, health literacy, how much people actually understand about their health and different diseases. And I think you have to also look at the numbers. Now, Singapore's a much smaller place and healthcare is actually relatively accessible. Pretty much every void deck, every HDB area, you will find a family clinic there. So if you know there's a family clinic downstairs, and you know how much it costs, you know what you're going to get, you've been there before, you know how much the medicines are going to cost, are you going to call a company where you don't know how much they're going to charge? Is there going to be hidden costs? And we've actually heard firsthand from our own patients that there often are hidden costs. There are some telemedicine companies that say they offer free medicine delivery, but for a $20 antibiotic, they're charging $70. But you don't know that until the end of the consultation. We've had our own patients tell us this. And then if you look at the UK, it's very different. Instead of 7 million people, you've got 65 million people. And in Singapore, the culture is you see a doctor a few times. If you're not getting better, the doctor refers you to a specialist. In the UK, if you refer 65 million people to a specialist, the entire system's going to collapse. So how do you balance that? You train GPs up to a very high standard so that they can manage very complex chronic conditions, complex diseases to a high level without having to refer. And they essentially then become the gatekeepers of the NHS. Hence, we have to specialize and become GPs through quite rigorous training and get our CCT, Certificate of Completion of Training, and all of that, same as any other specialty. And I think that's the thing that really differentiates the East and the West. Singapore, it's had its own kind of unique healthcare experiences to date. It's evolving quickly because of the pandemic. So now people are calling more for video consults and things like that. But in my opinion, I don't think Singapore will ever encounter a situation where video consults and house calls will replace traditional brick and mortar clinics and face-to-face consultations. I personally don't think so. I think there is potential, but it's possibly not quite as much as what the media and some people think it is.
Yeah, I think it would require a major mindset change and even a culture change. As you guys know, people are always resistant to change. Like what Dr. Bobby Stryker said, the pandemic has expedited and improved the future prospects of telehealth, but it is slow. But I think with the silver tsunami coming and the digitalization of many other services too, like online learning, online shopping, home delivery services, telehealth will eventually gain a foothold in Singapore too. But just right now, the take-up rate is going to be slow.
I've got a funny anecdote. So making that analogy about grocery shopping and ordering stuff, it's funny when people call us, they try and justify why they're calling us, which I always find quite amusing. They'll be like, oh, doctor, I'm so sorry. You know, normally I would be going down to my clinic downstairs, but today this happened, that happened. And so I was wondering if, and they have this really elaborate story. It's like thinking about if you call like McDonald's and you call them and say, look, hi guys, I'm really hungry. I can't come down. Do you think you could deliver it to me? And it's like, you don't have to justify it. It's okay. You want to call us. You don't have to be embarrassed.
People actually feel guilty calling us. Yeah, that's quite funny.
I think that kind of speaks of what both of you just mentioned about the whole culture that maybe Singaporeans have towards telehealth. I'm thinking also about your GP doctors who are just located in neighborhood areas. We also tend to think of them as family doctors because it's kind of an intergenerational thing. The grandparents see the same doctor, they build up this relationship. You know, sometimes they give you discounts and so on as well. And then the parents go and then they bring their children and then so on and so forth. So it's kind of establishing this long-term relationship. But yeah, it's pretty funny that they will feel apologetic about contacting you guys to do business. Maybe in a way, it's also kind of the Singaporean culture of being a bit paisa or a bit embarrassed about intruding into others and so on.
Yeah, so usually I'm the one answering the phone call. So the first 5 minutes will be to appease them. Don't worry, it's okay. We're pure house call doctor service. It's the only thing that we do. So it's quite funny.
I want to just say something separate, nothing to do with telemedicines and house call, but just following on from what you just said, it's so true. If you have a family doctor, they really can be a family doctor. And I'm just thinking about something that my dad told me. So he said that when he first became a GP in the UK, he was seeing patients who were very young. Then as he continued to stay there, because in the UK, you can't go from one GP clinic to another. You register with one GP clinic and you can only see a GP in that clinic. So that ensures that you have continuity of care, that you always have the appropriate follow-up. Someone knows your case. The records are in one place. And even if you want to see a specialist privately, you can't until you've seen your GP and obtained an appropriate referral. So it's all very streamlined and there's that bottleneck. So like I said, the GPs are pretty much the gatekeepers of the health system in the UK. And my dad said that he was seeing young patients when he first started. Then over the years, those young patients often got married. And those patients then, some got divorced, some got older, some died, and some had babies who he treated and their babies grew up and they got married. And it really was like a true kind of family medicines. He was literally seeing so many different generations of the family. So when he retired, he received so many cards and things from people. They were really kind of losing this pillar in their society, which I doubt I can ever live up to, though I'll always try. And you do see areas in Singapore where there's a similar vibe. They almost have celebrity doctors. People will go to their family clinics and specifically want to see a certain doctor who's been there for 20, 30 years and is so trusted and they are so familiar with the patient's record. So family medicine is a very unique entity from a doctor's perspective because it's the only place where you're going to see conditions from every specialty. You'll see pediatrics, you'll see gynecology, you'll see mental health, cardiology, chronic disease care, all of it. And you know, you can never know what's going to come through the door next. So if you find a good family doctor, you keep hold of them.
I think that'd be something that would be really ideal. And hopefully with a service like yours, a house call service, it'd be something that is achievable. This idea of having a personalized medicine and having a doctor that knows all of your conditions and follows through with everything. Because I think the experience that we have right now, given how accessible the national healthcare system of polyclinics is like, is usually more of depersonalized because we always see a different doctor each time and all our records are basically just locked into the electronic health system and whatever doctor is attending to you will look at it. Even if you go to a specialist, it is not guaranteed that you have the same specialist every time. In fact, more often than not, it's always a different doctor that is checking in on you.
Yeah, I can speak firsthand that that's the case. And it's sad. I was in the polyclinics for how many years? Is it eight?
About eight years.
But I mean, it's controversial to say this. The polyclinics, you'll see them saying the right things in the media. But what's going on behind the scenes is often very different because you have certain things that you've got to meet. You've got to see patients quickly. They see so many patients. You've got 1,000 patients going through the polyclinic a day, each polyclinic. So you've got to see patients very quickly. And if you're not seeing patients quickly, you probably will get a phone call from the head of the clinic. That's how it is. So it's a multifactorial thing, but often it means that the patient doesn't get to see the same doctor each time. I don't think it compromises healthcare, but I do feel it may compromise the rapport that could be built, which is going to be useful in ways that people might not expect in terms of rapport building, people adhering to treatments. And you adhere to treatments, you may be able to prevent avoidable hospital admissions, progressions of diseases, and all kinds of other things.
And I suppose in that sense, telemedicine, telehealth, house calls, they could be the piece in the puzzle here.
I think it really depends. Like I said, I think there are limitations to what can be done through telemedicine. So as a doctor, when we see a patient, 90% of our decision-making is done based on the history alone. So you tell me what's wrong. I will ask certain pertinent questions. And if I ask the right questions, I'll get the answers that I need to know what's wrong with you without even examining you. That's kind of the basis of a video consult and telemedicine. So good history taking is paramount. If after you've taken history, you still don't know what's going on, that means something's not right. Either you haven't asked the right questions or you need to examine the patient. And that's where telemedicine might not be appropriate. So who can't give a good history? What do you guys think?
someone who's old and has dementia, perhaps, or a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if you've got someone who's old, bedridden, can't speak because they've got some problem or maybe they've had a stroke, and similarly, if you've got a child, then how are you going to do an accurate assessment over a video consultation for these patients? A child can't verbalize what's wrong. They might just be crying. They might just have a fever, but you don't know where that infection's coming from. And have you ever done a video call with your friends? Have you seen how pixelated it can look? I've got colleagues who struggle to examine a child who's face-to-face in front of them. How are you going to examine a child's throat over a video consultation? MOH, of course, is completely aware of this, which is why they said telemedicine shouldn't be offered to children. But having said that, a lot of these other telemedicine companies are still offering it to children. In addition to that, medicines, if you're going to prescribe medicines for children, they have to be based on the child's weight. And if the parents don't have the appropriate instruments, weighing scales and things like that, you might make miscalculations or prescribe the wrong dose of medicines and all kinds of stuff. So there are significant limitations to what can be done safely through telemedicine. And if we're being frank, most of the young people who call us, they just want to rest. They need that MC. And that's still the bulk of the patients that we see through telemedicine. And that's okay, because it's not that it's easier. You go to a family clinic, you will still get that MC. So the end result is still the same. So just saying, just because it ends with an MC that it's bad, it's no different. And if it allows the physical clinics to be freed up, so people who urgently have to be seen face-to-face, if they can access that care more readily and more quickly, then it's a good thing.
I suppose it sounds like the future of the healthcare industry in Singapore, we could see both telemedicine and telehealth are working hand in hand with our national healthcare system, so supplementing the loopholes in each of them. And I think that sounds really optimistic. I think, as Juliana, you mentioned as well earlier, that in the future, given the whole rapid process of digitalization, whether that's shopping or in other platforms as well, healthcare is also another area that could pick up, despite it being really heavily regulated as of right now.
Yeah, it probably will end up as some kind of hybrid. I mean, even telemedicine and even home visit, it's still evolving. So there's all kinds of, you know, like telemetry, home-based monitoring, things that can be set up, which is still kind of being explored. I mean, if you just look at the recent initiative where the government handed out the oxygen pulse oximeter, the saturation monitors, it's very useful. It's one of our most useful tools. And now that family members have it, we can straight off the bat sometimes advise patients when they call us, oh, by the way, my granddad's a bit chesty. I'll just now ask them, have you got that device? They'll say, yes. I said, put it on the finger. Real life example, earlier today, the reading is 89. I said, that's an emergency. So you have to call an ambulance. And then they're so grateful. So there's all these tools, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. So there's a lot of things which are evolving. In future, these devices might be connected to your family clinic so that they can actually monitor your condition remotely and things like that.
That's why at Rescue, we actually believe more in educating and increasing the community's health literacy as a whole. We always believe in prevention is better than cure. People say healthcare. But if you look at it, it's more like disease care, isn't it? We're not really here to prevent diseases. We're here to treat the diseases that has already happened. So I'm not medically trained at all. I would say if you're not medically trained, you're either a patient or a family member of a patient. I see both sides now. And so many times when I went with them on house calls, I see that a lot of these chronic diseases are becoming more prevalent in younger patients. Just a few days ago, we actually saw a 25-year-old having severe gout attack, which I don't think is normal at all. I attribute all these to lifestyles and unfavorable nutrition plans and maybe inactivity. So that's why if you also look at our social media channels, it's less of a billboard of all our services. Like a lot of other clinics, they try to do like, oh, this is what we offer. This is our latest services. So for us, we try to gear towards education, telling them first, this is what you can do to prevent this. We don't want this to happen to you too. So this is why me and Bobby, besides treating patients, we've also started a new program. It's a nutrition and fitness program to help people adopt healthier lifestyles to try to prevent all these things from happening first. Let's hope we can actually execute healthcare instead of disease care.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jules is right. You don't generally see a doctor unless you're sick. So it really does become more disease care than healthcare. And we don't get so caught up in taking care of these diseases that the pre-disease state, the healthcare part, kind of gets neglected. You have health promotion board and whatnot doing their best, but how much do people actually listen to that kind of advice? And yeah, we are seeing serious diseases, chronic conditions occurring in younger and younger people. So we try our best to share information with no hidden agenda, just to educate so that hopefully patients can then become more health literate, more savvy with their own health and take care of themselves better. But there's a lot of nonsense out there too. For example, if you are trying to get into shape and lose some weight, which may be making you unwell, triggering your gout attacks or giving you pre-diabetes, you might go onto YouTube or Instagram and see someone with a six pack and think, okay, I follow this guy's routine. He says, get a six pack in 2 weeks, get shredded with a 1 million calorie 5 minute workout, which is complete garbage and it doesn't work. So that's why we then created our sister project 3F.energy, where we get the evidence-based methods to help you if you want to do this. And you want to do it enjoyably and sustainably without suffering, you can do it. And it sometimes just requires subtle changes to your diet and lifestyle. And you can still enjoy a lot of food and do a lot of things. And it's often not as complicated as people think. But there's a lot of fake fitness news as well as every other kind of news right now. So we hope that with our kind of reputation preceding us with Rescue, that people then know, okay, so this is something else I can trust. I can go to this website if I want to get into better health and better fitness and prevent that kind of disease care stage where I have to call Rescue to come and treat my gout attack. So that's what we're trying to do. It's funny, if you do look at the social media pages of different healthcare companies, you're going to see all kinds of stuff. We saw one of our peers the other day, and it's really scary. I saw it and I was scared. They were like, the pandemic is under control, but you still might get dengue. And it's like, you know, okay, now I've got another reason to be scared. It's like, okay, so...
I saw the comments that people are like, oh, great, we're dead.
I think it's really inspiring that even though you primarily provide healthcare services, you're also doing advocacy work to prevent people from even falling into illness. I hope that more healthcare services and people will understand that there's this fine balance between fear-mongering and encouraging people to lead better lifestyles. Perhaps on this note, we can end off.
I do have to say one last thing. If that's an ECG behind you, it's a very worrying looking ECG. It's clearly that patient's going into ventricular fibrillation or something.
I believe this was designed by our publicity team. Probably we valued aesthetics more than medical concerns.
I see. Okay.
All right then, on this note, we shall end the podcast. Thank you so much for having this discussion with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
If you want to find out more about health and tech or hear about similar experiences, follow us at our social media platforms at Heart to Health Talk. That's at Heart to Health Talk, where additional resources and nuggets of wisdom can be found. Hope to catch you in our next episode. Bye!